powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
What an unbelievable win yesterday for the Seattle Mariners. And by that, I mean, it is nearly unbelievable. At one point, they had, I think, a 1.2% chance of winning. Daniel Kramer of MLB.com constructed this really cool article. It's on the Mariners website, looking at kind of like the breakdown of the win percentage according to Fangraphs. After Jesse Winker ground out with the first out, top of the ninth, they had a 1.2% chance of winning. So it was all but guaranteed that they would lose. But then, Ty France gets things started with a solo home run.
Here's the stretch and the pitch. Swung on, a fly ball down the right field line in toward the corner. On the run, Calhoun going back, and this one is gone. Goodbye, baseball. Just over the fence, down the right field line, opposite field, home run for Ty France. His eighth home run of the season, and it's now the Rangers 5 and the Mariners 3, their second home run of the day. Suarez had one in the fourth, and Ty France reaching out, going the other way, and he gets out of here down the right field line.
Julio gets on base, JP gets on base, they have a pair of singles, and then Eugenio Suarez comes up with a two-run double.
Pitch on the way, swinging, a line drive into right field, in toward the corner, fair ball. Scoring from third is Julio. Around to third is Crawford. He's being waved in. The throw-in is cut off. Relay to the plate. JP slides. He's safe for the Mariners. Have tied it. Holy smokes. Eugenio Suarez with a double the other way in the right field corner. Rodriguez scores. Crawford scores. And the game is tied at 5-5. Four runs batted in for Eugenio.
One last thing before I move on, which is JP post-game saying he was scoring on that double no matter what he scored from first, by the way. Maniacta was waving him in, but he was like, yeah, that was happening.
If he would have given you the stop sign, would you have kept going?
Yeah.
Okay. So it looked like you got a pretty good read on the ball, like when he hit it off the bat.
Oh, yeah, off the bat, I was like, yeah, I'm scoring. I think I was going too fast to stop anyway, so, yeah, I was going.
Did you expect it to be a little closer play at the plate there?
Yeah, I did. I thought I was about to overrun the bag, too, but thankfully I didn't.
It felt like everything was improbable about this. For instance, again, Daniel Kramer's same article, that Ty France home run had a chance to be a home run or would have cleared the fences in just five ballparks, thankfully, Globe Life, one of them.
Yes, thank goodness. But that, to me, is very reminiscent of last year. Very reminiscent of last year in regards to their ability to come up with clutch hits at the end of games and really grind out these games each and every single night. And this series against the Rangers, it wasn't an offensive, you know, light it up type of series. This was very much a grind it out. Every hit matters. Every pitch matters. It is going to come down to the wire. And it was great to see them win this type of series. Yeah, you could say it's against the Rangers, but it doesn't matter. It's the type of games, it's being in those moments, it's having those experiences, and it's coming up clutch. And that is something that these Mariners, I don't believe, have really done enough of, you know, really clutch hitting, runners in scoring position, things of that nature that make me feel overly optimistic. So when it happens, mm-hmm. when they are able to do that in a series like this, it makes me feel like, Stacey, this could be a jumping off point for this team. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but it feels
like...
You
need to knock on wood immediately. I don't know where there's wood nearby.
How about that?
Yeah.
Now, it makes me feel like that these are some of those moments that you need to have happen in the clubhouse to provide that spark or that boost or that confidence overall in your team. And don't look now, guys. Don't look. But they've won three straight series. They've won three straight series. And that's a pretty darn good place to be in after all of the struggles that they have gone through. And Stacy.
And great news. They have a series coming up against the Houston Astros.
Yes. Who they beat a couple series ago.
You know what? Thank goodness they've got Justin Verlander coming up here. So pencil in one win at least.
Justin Verlander? You mean the guy who gave up four home runs last week?
No, that's why
Mariners?
I said pencil in one win at least.
Oh,
at least we'll have an easy one.
More like Justin Verlander. Guys, remember when I made that joke?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So does it work? Does it work twice? Does it work once? Oh, boy.
I forgot. forget to bring in your donuts.
Oh my gosh!
Sorry,
Stacy.
I'm sorry. I'll bring them in. I'll bring them in tomorrow
and Friday.
And Friday. Related to this series win, though, the Mariners keep winning and they keep getting you guys donuts. That's exactly what's happening here. Now, important thing for the Mariners is you mentioned, like, you know, hey, I know it was against the Rangers. I feel like the Mariners they can't really look down on too many teams. Like, it was against the Rangers, and yeah, that's great, right? Like,
yeah.
That's and thank goodness you got that done, but you have a series loss against the A's. You have a series loss, what was it earlier? Not Baltimore, was it? No.
No, it wasn't Baltimore.
But you have struggled against teams that you should have beat.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, to me, I'm like, yeah, it was the Rangers, and you know what? If you, the Mariners, get a series win over Houston, that's huge.
It is huge. I mean, it would be massive, to be quite frank. I mean, if you're looking at, you know, now ahead, the next three series are going to be against good quality teams, right? The next three series are going to be against playoff caliber teams in the Houston Astros, the Minnesota Twins, and also you're looking at the Boston Red Sox, as we know, unfortunately, from experience, have the ability to light it up at any given moment. So these are going to be very challenging series. These are going to be in the month of June. This is your difficult stretch right here. So what they do in these next three series are going to be critical, because if they can just play 500 level ball through, you know, these next three series, they are set up to take off against a struggling Angels team, against the A's, against Baltimore. I mean, that's what their schedule finishes out when you look at, you know, June 16th on down. So these next three series are going to be critical. But the fact that they have been able to get themselves in this position, and thank goodness that the baseball gods have been favorable to the Mariners over the last little bit, not just from their own successes, but also that everyone around them is sputtering. I mean, the Angels are in a tailspin that they cannot get out of right now, right? I mean, they are crashing and burning at the current moment. 11 straight losses, Stacey. 11! And right now, the Mariners, how many games back do you think they are in the wild card?
Three.
Way to look it up.
What do you mean
three.
Look it up?
It is
how
three.
How many do I think they are back? Three.
They are three games back.
I know
back.
It.
Yes. Gosh. You just have to know
Jake
everything.
Jake was trying to build towards that.
Sorry.
Three games.
Sorry.
Work with me. Right. Be a teammate.
Oh, sorry. How many?
No, you were supposed to get something like, I don't know, nine.
Yeah.
And Jake was like, no.
No.
It's three.
That's
sorry,
right.
You're like, what?
Yep. Sorry.
That's how it goes.
I feel see, like over-accomplishing.
Curtis is teaching
Stacey,
you good, no, it's no, good entertaining no, radio no, right
radio
now.
Radio back and forth.
No, I'm sorry. What it was the fifth grade Stacey that when, like, the teacher was gone, I was like, we had homework. Like, that's that I came out. And when you asked me a question, I thought, I know the answer. And so look, you know what? I am going to tap out. You go ahead and carry the rest of this segment, Jake. I
okay.
got it, buddy.
Yeah, all right. Thank
there you.
You. Actually, I need you to keep talking,
oh,
but that's okay.
Okay.
But anyways, they right now, I think when you're talking about the Mariners, yes, they're only three games back from
what?
The wild card. Okay, the act's
okay,
over, Stacey.
Okay.
All right. Now, three games back from the wild card. And they honestly have put themselves in a position where they absolutely have a chance to be in the thick of this race. And that is exciting. That is, honestly, you don't believe it based off of how the season has gone, especially the month of May. But honestly, this is where you get to find out what this team is all about. And this is the month that they have to really start gaining that momentum and capitalize on their opportunities, no matter who they are, Stacey, to your point. But they have to take advantage of this month of June, and these next three series are going to be critical if they can really, truly gain some serious ground.
Well, and I still look at Houston as a tough, no matter the success that you've had at home against them, they're going to be really, really tough. And it's not going to be the end of the world if you drop this series to Houston at Minute Maid. You know, I don't mean to look at it and say kind of like, you know, summing it up as a loss. That's certainly not what I'm doing. But I do, what I'm saying is the Mariners haven't bought themselves any wiggle room, but having won three series, you feel infinitely better. Because it's rare that in the end of May and in early June, which is where we were when this streak started, you think that anything is a must-win game.
Yeah, you do.
And yet, the Mariners dug such a hole that it's exactly what they've needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they've managed to do it. And so you kind of like breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief, and you understand it's a long season, but you just think like, okay, like the most important thing you needed to do was to just start walking backwards, like to start trying to get out of that.
Yes.
And you started that.
Yeah, you
have. That's step one. That's step one. Who knows what this series against Houston is going to be? Who knows what's going to happen when you get back to T-Mobile? But step one was like, hey, get out of that hole just a little bit. And they did.
They did. And you know what? You also have to have players step up. And one of the things that, to me, infinitely is going to be a concern and is just the reality of where the Mariners are at is that, unfortunately, they need to lengthen their lineup in the worst way. That help is not coming, okay? Kyle Lewis, his concussion symptoms seem to be lingering. He's not going to be returning anytime soon. That's what the conversation is. It's unclear what his timeline is to return. Obviously, Mitch Haniger's ankle injury is still severe, and he's recovering from that. So this is the group that you're going to have to work with. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, you have to have the top end of your lineup really step up. And that guy this week, or in this particular series against the Texas Rangers, was Eugenio Suarez. I mean, he came through in a big, big way multiple times in this series, and it was great to see. And right now, when you look at this team, in regards to how it's being set up, the Ty France, J.P. Crawford, off to tremendous starts, and J.P. has slid, you know, his production over the last month. But guys like Eugenio Suarez and Julio Rodriguez, I mean, the crazy thing is they're at both 1.5 war. Okay? They're both at 1.5 war. So that means that they're on pace for, you know, over four. Is it four, four and a half? Four and a half.
It's around four and a half.
Okay, so around four and a half war. That is incredible. Mm. That is incredible, Stacey. And it may fly under the radar, not Julio, but Eugenio Suarez, his production, that is flying under the radar right now. To add context, okay, what does war mean and why is that good? To add context, it's win above replacement. Kyle Seager, who everyone has clamored for, and gosh, don't you wish you could have that bat and everything else, he was a two war last year. He was a two war last year. So you may have two guys outside of Ty France and J.P. Crawford who are performing and stepping up for this lineup and performing at a very, very high level. And that, if you're going to see this run and this jump, it's because you're going to see continued progression and continue production from guys like Eugenio Suarez and Julio Rodriguez to continue to keep filling in the gaps here.
Speaking of filling in the gaps and kind of people needing to, you know, produce and keep this thing going, Robbie Ray getting the start tonight. And I'm going to move on to headline rewrites so that we can, you know, we're going to come back to this. But that conversation in general about, like, remember his last start? We ended up talking with, who did we talk to? Brandon Gustafson, a couple other people just for a while about, like, hey, man, I don't regret signing Robbie Ray. It was the right move at the time. But how do you make sense of an underperforming season? I mean, it would be hard to expect a Cy Young winner again, but an underperforming season.
Yeah.
And then also feeling truly as though this club made the right choice to bring him in. They brought in the best arm in free agency.
Yeah, it's tough to really wrap your mind around that. But you also have to be able to look at Robbie Ray and see the good that he has done to, you know, you have to be able to separate both of those things to be able to say, all right, Robbie still has it in him. It's not like this guy's completely lost it. It's not like he's a complete shell of himself. He just hasn't been able to put it together for an entire game, and yeah, that has been the problem for him. And you're hoping that that can happen sooner rather than later.
All right, you got Ray, Flex, and Gilbert in this series. So, again, we'll do more previews as we get closer, particularly tomorrow during the dugout. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, Golden State rebounded last night in Game 2 with a blowout win over Boston to even up the NBA Finals at one game each. What's the real headline?
Thank you to the Warriors for saving us from the only thing more insufferable than Boston sports fans with a 1-0 series lead. Boston sports fans with a 2-0 series lead.
Big ups to the Warriors.
I mean, as us longtime Warriors fans have always said,
go Warriors. Warriors.
We've always said that. Another third quarter issue here for Boston. They were outscored 35-14. The difference is that, unlike game one, they couldn't bounce back. The Warriors just completely dominated after what was a really competitive first half between these two.
Well, the problem with this final so far that has really been a bummer to me is that it has been not even close to competitive. Like,
in either game,
it has been pure blowouts. Like, that's not a fun finals.
That's not fun. Yes. It hasn't come down to the wire. The first half, not even where close. Warriors have a 2-point lead or something.
Yeah, I mean, Golden State was up 52-50 at halftime.
Yeah, so it was a close first half. The difference is that the third quarter separated it, and then it was never that competitive.
Stacey, even though is it a game that you are excited to watch all the way through? All the way to the end?
From start to the end of? No. No, it was not.
Exactly. Finals are supposed to be games that go down to the wire. They're supposed to be something that just keeps you entertained and gripping the edge of your seat. And so far, that has not been the case with these two games. That's been the bummer.
Make the finals fun.
Yes.
Make the finals fun. Funnels isn't going to work, so I had to try. Not every shot I make goes in. Okay.
Much like the Celtics last night.
Ooh.
Oh, boy.
Headline number two, the LA Angels have lost 11 games in a row. Count them, 11. Yesterday, they were up 6-2 in the eighth inning. Then this grand slam from Bryce Harper happened.
Yeah, baby! Fly ball to deep right field! This game is tied in a long way! Into the second deck, Bryce Harper! He's just lifted the lid off the yard! It's a 6-6 game!
Now, the Angels managed to get a run back in their half of the ninth inning, making it 7-6. But then Bryson Stott came up to the dish and ended things.
Runners go. 3-2 is hit in the air to right field. It's fouled beautifully. It is over! Three-run home run for Bryson Stott. The prayers have been answered. The Phillies have won it here in the bottom of the ninth inning.
That's a fun call.
I just like hearing the Angels lose.
Yeah.
For the 11th time in a row.
God.
What's the real headline?
The city of Anaheim hasn't seen a drop like this since Splash Mountain.
Oh.
Ah.
I like it.
Yes.
We're a very punny kind of show.
Well done. Splash Mountain, what a classic. What a classic ride.
Yeah, you guys made me watch 5 minutes of highlights.
Well, yeah, because you've never been to Disneyland.
No.
Which is like the saddest thing to me. I mean,
my parents love me.
Well, yeah.
Do they?
They do. No, they do.
Okay.
They do. I just didn't like rides when I was little. I tell you what I liked doing. I liked going to the store and buying pencils.
Gosh, you sound like a real fun time.
You couldn't play teacher at Disneyland, could you?
Gosh.
All right, class. Book reports are due. Stacey, that's Pluto.
We're not going over to Stacey's house again.
There's something for everyone at Disneyland, okay? I mean, come on.
Well, now that you're a full-fledged adult with expendable income, your parents are never taking you to Disneyland.
Never. That's the thing. I missed out on that forever. So now I have to take myself to Disneyland. But is it going to be as fun? Because
you got to get a group.
But you're not a kid anymore. Is it as fun
It's still
when you're
really
not a kid?
Fun.
It's so fun. Absolutely it is. 100%.
But the problem is, you told us you're not really a rides person.
I mean, I can understand the thrill of them. Like, if I am on one, it's fine. But I remember I went to Knott's Berry Farms. And they have that wooden roller coaster. And the entire time, I just kept thinking, what if this collapses?
Oh, yeah, because you're a hypochondriac.
Yeah, I'm a hypochondriac.
You think
a warrior,
of the worst
I have a lot of anxiety.
Possible scenario in all of these.
Yes,
things.
Correct. The entire time.
You just have to do it. And I will tell you that I wasn't a rides person either. Stacey, I'm making it a mission, okay? I was a rides person, okay? I was not a rides person, and when we went to Miami, we bought a year pass down to Universal Studios, and I didn't like rides. So how was that going to make any sense? So Brooke made me go on every ride, and I closed my eyes every ride that I went on.
You close your eyes, I can't get you.
And we did it so much that eventually I started to open my eyes, and I was like, "Oh, this is awesome! This is really really fun. I love this." So now I'm a I love going on rides, scary rides, all of it. But Stacey, you just got to do it. Just try it.
Great text from the 206. Stacy's Make the Finals Fun chant says, that sounds like something double major Stacy used to chant in college.
I will not be shamed for being studious and careful. Next headline.
Come on, guys. We all got to say it.
Make the Finals Fun. Did everyone get your Ticonderogas?
Gosh.
Number two pencil.
Make sure your Scantron sheets are all filled out.
God.
Properly fill in the bubbles.
Me not having friends as a child makes a lot of sense now as an adult. Now that I look back, I'm connecting the dots.
Oh, man.
Headline number three. Conflicting reports have emerged on the sale of the Denver Broncos. Forbes magazine saying Walmart heir Rob Walton has purchased the team for $4.5 billion. Meanwhile, ESPN's Adam Schefter reports there is no frontrunner at this time. What's the real headline?
Broncos almost changed their mind on the sale. But they got to pay for that Russell Wilson contract somehow. You know what I mean? Sell the team.
They got to shake out the couch cushions.
That's exactly what it is. How do we find? Have you guys seen $50 million?
You got to go to Coinstar.
Yeah. Have you guys ever taken a lot of change to Coinstar at the grocery store? You put it in and everyone stares at you and you're like, what? Yeah. It's American Tender.
Also, the also
and
great.
You get like 20 bucks back.
Also, the great disappointment of the realization that there's a fee involved with this.
Now,
right?
There is, if you want cash back, if you get it in Amazon credit, you get the full amount.
Amazon credit?
Yeah.
The corporate goons at Amazon are all over the Coinstar.
Jeff Bezos got his paws all over your coins.
That's exactly what he's doing.
That's
he's like,
unbelievable.
I can give you two quarters back, or that's my rich person voice. The second I'm trying to sound like a billionaire, I'm Rob Walton. Gonna buy the Broncos. I don't know why.
I'm sure that's what they all sound like.
How do you not? Jeff Bezos doesn't sound like that, but the second you imagine Jeff Bezos inside of the Coinstar saying, do you want these quarters?
They're in on everything. Coin, like, just the coins. It's unbelievable to me. But the fact that the Coinstar, look, it's a service. I get it. I'm all for it. But you're taking my hard-earned money that I found lying around in my house and dumping it in, and you're going to take $2 away from me?
Correct.
How dare you?
Correct.
How dare you?
For the effort of counting it.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. The entirety of the Mac and Jack's text line letting me know Disneyland is still very fun as an adult.
It is. I'm telling you.
Unanimous feedback.
You have to go. I'm serious. You got to do this.
Larry Stone of the Seattle Times had this really interesting article come out over the weekend about who the face of the Seahawks is now. I mean, we all have different ideas about who it could be, but here's my question for you guys. Does it matter? I think it does. That's next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
Really interesting interview on the GM Journey podcast with John Schneider. That's coming up in 30 minutes. We're also going to talk about Eugenio Suarez in 15. Before we get to any of it, though, who's the face of the Seahawks now? And does it matter? It was a really interesting article by Larry Stone of the Seattle Times, friend of the show. And this was my favorite part about it. I'm going to tell you why it matters and why we're talking about it right now. First, I'm going to read it to you. He said, I realize that's an overblown term, face of the franchise, that is, that the media likes to bandy about as if it had some sort of cosmic significance. Yet the fact that no one definitively comes to mind speaks to the reality that this is a Seattle team in transition, awaiting the emergence of new stars. I thought that that excerpt from the article was so hugely important because as we're sitting here, Jake, and we're talking about who's the face of the franchise, I can already kind of see the response now from some listeners. Some listeners might be texting in saying, oh, it's Tyler Lockett. Oh, it's Jamal. Oh, it's, maybe it's Drew Lock. Maybe it's, you know, Quandre Diggs, whoever you think it is. I can already see that there are some responses of people saying, who cares? Who cares who the face of the franchise is? If the Seahawks are winning, that's all that matters. But there is a strong correlation between having a face of the franchise, having superstars, and winning because the reality is that, Jake, stars are stars for a reason. And more often than not, that reason is because they're exceptional players. So I get the whole, like, oh, I'm a little too cool for school. I don't really care what outsiders think. You know, I don't need stars. We don't need stars. But the reality is this is a multi-billion-dollar business. The NFL is about winning. It's about competition. And star power is a good thing. Star power is what you should want. You, as a Seahawks fan, should want all of your young players to become stars. You should want fans of other teams to look at that player and think, oh, man, how did the Broncos pass on that guy? How did the Chargers pass on that guy? How did these teams not take DK? How did these teams not take Jordan Brooks? Like, you're a you're probably a winning team if that's the conversation that other teams are having about you. So I get the whole, like, oh, I don't care about being popular. But this isn't like about a plucky underdog. This is about how important it is to genuinely have stars, to have stars and superstars in professional sports. Mm-hmm. And the more you have, the better you are, because those guys are stars for a reason.
No question. And the team that won the Super Bowl last year had a whole lot of stars, right? So that is going to be the aspect of this whole new building of a new era that is going to be majorly important, okay? Now, one of the aspects that you might see from people is, hey, we're happy to start over. We're happy to start this new era because you know what? We can do it again.
Mm-hmm.
You know who stepped up as leaders that no one ever thought? Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman, Pitt Doug Baldwin. You go down the list of these names. Earl Thomas, Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright. I mean, you just go down this list of names, and they've done it once. They can do it again. But that is so incredibly difficult. It is so incredibly difficult. So where you're at as a team is that you're hoping that you're giving, you know, certain guys opportunities to step up and fill the void of these leadership roles. And Stacey, for me, you speak to superstars and wanting to see the emergence of superstars and how those superstars will naturally come into that leadership role. For me, what I worry about from a leadership perspective is, do you have enough of the right leaders? There's always guys that will be the quote-unquote face of the franchise, but that doesn't mean that you have a locker room that has the perfect, you know, melting pot of personalities
and
look leadership.
At the Browns. How many stars did they have? And then they also, like, weren't super great as a result because you were never fully, like, a fully formed functioning team. I
Correct.
Mean, they did much better under Stefanski, and obviously they got there with Baker Mayfield, but how many first overall picks, second overall picks, third mm-hmm. overall picks did they have? And it wasn't enough because they didn't have the right mix.
Yes, 100%. And the 253, you nailed it. You nailed it right here. Said Pete is the face of the franchise. Pete Carroll is the face of the franchise. And that is 100% true.
Yeah, but
Stacey, he is the face of the franchise.
Yeah, but when you say, oh, the Pete Carroll and the Seahawks take on, like, that's who I'm thinking of.
Yeah, that should be the conversation right now. Because right now, we don't know who those leaders are going to be. We don't know who's going to step up. And yes, you could point to Tyler Lockett and Quandre Diggs and those two guys.
I think DK's your biggest superstar.
Well, he's your biggest superstar, but that doesn't always equate to leadership.
Yeah, but sometimes your superstars aren't your biggest leaders. They don't have to be one and the same.
No, but I believe that most great teams, for the most part, your superstars are your really strong leaders.
Yeah, but most great teams have a mix of guys. But for instance, I don't think that Dwayne Brown was the biggest star on this team when he was here. He was one of the biggest leaders in this locker room.
I would think
very few people outside of maybe Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner had more influence in that locker room than Dwayne Brown.
Yeah, I would very much agree with
but
that statement.
But you've never saw any kind of promo that was like, Dwayne Brown and the Seahawks.
No, and that's why you have to have a melting pot of leadership, and that's what I'm going to be fascinated to watch with this group and this organization is who emerges as those guys. I mean, Shelby Harris is somebody on the defensive side that, you know, had very strong reviews about, you know, his personality from Denver coming over here to Seattle. Maybe he steps up and emerges as one of those guys, unlikely players. But if you're talking about superstars, wanting your superstars to be leaders, then you're looking at DK Metcalf and Jamal Adams. Those are the two guys that have the biggest personalities, that have the strongest personalities. And when playing at their best, they're two of the best players in the NFL that command a lot of respect. And so you would love to see those two guys really branch out and emerge as very, very strong leaders. There's no question about that. But my question is, you can be leaders in the offseason. You can be leaders and you can stand up and you can say things and you could proclaim, you know, different things all you want. But when it comes down to it, when it comes down to leadership in adverse times, leadership when things are hard, that opens up a different can of worms. And a perfect example of that, Stacey, is I'll give you two circumstances from my own playing career, okay? Number one, when I was at Kansas, there were a lot of really good, talented players that wanted to step up and do the right things and try to set a different culture and all that. And then the moment we got to the season and things got hard, there was already this pre-existing culture of losing. That's not the case here in Seattle. This is a culture of winning. At Miami, we had my senior year there when I was there, we had 14 guys. We had 14 guys that played in the NFL that got drafted or signed contracts with the NFL. So very, very talented team. There was very little leadership on that team and barely made a bowl game. I think we went to the Shreveport, Louisiana Duck Commander Bowl, okay, in Shreveport, Louisiana. Classic. And greatly...
One of the crown jewels of bowl season.
Oh, it was a blast,
Peach Bowl,
let me
Sugar
tell
Bowl,
you.
And then the Shreveport, Louisiana Duck Commander Bowl.
Oh, so much fun. So much fun. There were so many activities down there. But, you know, you greatly underperform. And the biggest thing that this organization has to do is not only do they have to develop the on-field product, but they have to develop the leadership aspect of this team. And where is that going to come from? Jordan Brooks? DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Quandre Diggs.
Maybe.
Who's going to be the next Dwayne
Brown?
I
don't think it has to be. Well, I don't, and I also don't think that your face of the franchise has to be a quarterback. So if you're looking at like where leadership has to come from and where your face of the franchise has to come from, because presumably your face of the franchise is one of your, if not your biggest leader.
It's not going to come from this quarterback group.
Well, it doesn't have this year. To. I mean, if you think LA Rams, do you think Matt Stafford or do you think Aaron Donald?
Well, you think Aaron Donald, but it's not like Matthew Stafford's taking a back seat.
No, he's certainly not. He's a quarterback, but it's Aaron Donald's team.
Yes.
Aaron Donald is the face of the franchise. No, he's one of the very best players in all of the NFL. So in order to be not a quarterback in the face of the franchise, you kind of got to be exceptional. But, I mean, I think that there's potentially room for that to happen. Now, my answer to who the face of the franchise is or can be or will be probably for this year certainly was DK Metcalf. And it's because I was thinking of it not from a leadership point of view, although I do think he wants to be a leader, but from stardom. Like in the promos that you're going to see, And what's driving viewership to watch the Seahawks when you're not from Seattle, it's going to be someone like DK Metcalf.
But to me, that's a different conversation. That's a star versus leader. Can DK grow into that leadership role, and does he want to?
We've never seen him have to.
Exactly. So to me, it's very much TBD. It's the same thing with Jamal Adams. I know the type of personality he has. I know what he's like out there in practice, and he's very vocal, and he's a high-energy guy, and he certainly fits the culture of what is here in Seattle. But can he not only perform, but can he step up to really truly be that dependable, stable leader that this organization needs those two guys to grow into? And that's going to be a new challenge for them.
I want to get back to this at 11:45 because I think that I think there's like three different conversations going on. And ultimately it comes down to like, what is the face of the franchise? Like what makes the face of the franchise? Is it star power or is it being a leader? Because I think that it's two different conversations. Let's get back to it at 11:45 because I'm seeing all kinds of feedback from listeners too. First, though, Eugenio Suarez has 100% done his job this year. So what's that been? That's next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
And the 2-0 pitch, swinging a fly ball, going to be deep to right field. Calhoun going back, looking up, and goodbye baseball. He went the other way, and he sends it out of the ballpark. Eugenio Suarez with his 10th home run of the season, a 2-run home run here in the top of the 9th inning, and the Mariners take over the lead 4-3, 3 runs batted in for Suarez in this ball game.
My favorite part about doing this show every day is it's truly like, no joke, it's three friends that just...
We clown on each other.
Tears in my eyes. So Curtis, not even talking about what we're talking about.
Stacey has a penchant for talking over highlights.
I don't mean to, but I'm an incredibly forgetful person. And so in
or
my
are
ear,
you just over anxious because you're just waiting?
Both of those things are true and related. In my ear, Curtis, who's obviously he's driving the show, he's the producer, he'll get in my ear and he'll say, I'm playing a highlight, or like, hey, we're bringing on an interview, I have a highlight. And so many times I've forgotten and I go, like,
you're just, welcome back,
and then it's
like
starts playing.
Middle of Riz's highlight.
So now I've started taking to turning on my talkback mic, which for anyone who isn't in radio, it's where only Curtis can hear it, but then I pretend I'm on air to like, you know, freak him
throw
out and
off.
Make him to throw him off. And I said, it was like talkback, Mike, and you said.
Or you said something like, I was just kidding, and I was like, I know.
Yeah.
In the same voice that you use.
You guys just bully me all the time.
That is not
true.
Your
guys' impressions of me, by the way, are horrible impressions.
I think that's what makes them great. It's how bad they are.
They're also somewhat spot on.
I have two things to tell you in the next 10 minutes. Number one, we'll start with the more important thing, which is Eugenio Suarez is doing his job. Now, about an hour ago, we were all sitting in the sports pit and we were planning for the show. And I never, ever thought that when the trade for Winker and Suarez was made, that on this day, June 6th, 2022, at about 9:50 at the time, Curtis would turn to us and say, imagine where the team would be without Eugenio Suarez. I did not expect.
Didn't expect.
Wrap
your mind around the fact that after that trade with Cincinnati was made, a couple months from now, we'd be like, man, Eugenio Suarez.
Right.
What he has been for this team has been phenomenal. But it has been. He's been absolutely wonderful for them, not just obviously driving in the tying runs, ultimately the tying run yesterday with that two-run double, but also with what is he? Is he tied for the lead in home runs, Curtis, on this team, or is he leading the team?
He's leading the Mariners.
Yeah,
leading the Mariners. Leading the Mariners in home runs. He's been absolutely phenomenal for them. And John Morosi, on with Wyman and Bob a while ago, talking about Suarez being so far what the Mariners have expected.
I think Suarez, you would hope to maybe produce a little more evenly, or I suppose not quite strike out as much as he has. I mean, certainly we knew the strikeouts were going to be big when he came over, but he has hit 9 homers, and he's got an OPS plus that's better than league average. In fact, about 19% above what the league average is. So I think Suarez has basically been what you expected.
So if we're going to talk about how they should have done more in the offseason, and I will die on that hill and I'll never change my mind, you've also got to point to areas where Jerry DePoto did a good thing. And one of them was bringing in Eugenio Suarez.
Yes.
And you have to say credit to you for this.
Correct. And look, you would love that entire trade to be the perfect trade with Jesse Winker and Suarez. But, you know, one of the things that you wanted with Suarez is to legitimately replace the production of Kyle Seager. And that's what Suarez has done. I mean, he's hit 11 home runs. He's just 5 RBIs underneath Ty France at 32. Mm-hmm. He is somebody who strikes out a lot. And unfortunately, you know, Curtis, last we checked, which was today, he leads the league in strikeouts.
71 already.
Not ideal. Look, not ideal, but
if you want to point to that, though, in his breakout year of 2019 when he had 49 home runs, mm-hmm. he still led the National League in strikeouts that year with 189, but he batted 271, had a 930 OPS, and his OPS plus was 131, 2 points lower than what it is right now.
Am I imagining or misremembering Scott Servais either last night after the game or a couple nights ago saying that Eugenio Suarez is just going to be that guy that once in a while he's going to have a couple games in a row where he just strikes out?
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing what Scott said, but yes. Basically being like, he's that kind of player. He's going to strike out. He's going to strike out. He might have an 0-for-4 day, and then he'll win you the game the next day.
100%. But also, isn't that what Kyle Seager, what a lot of his game was?
Yes.
So people that are sitting there clamoring for Kyle Seager and everything else, you fail to look at what Eugenio Suarez has done this year. He's been great. He's been very good. And I'm sorry, I have not seen the same, you know, bad play at third base that a lot of people try to proclaim. Has Suarez made some mistakes this year? Yeah, he has. But he is overall, he has not been a negative over there at third base, not even close to it. He has played good, solid third base for you. And I think that he has been everything that, like John Morosi said, has been everything that they were hoping he would be. And in my opinion, we have not seen Suarez get hot yet. And he has every ability in this league to be one of the most feared hitters in all of baseball. He does. And you look at his 2019 season, he's one of the best power hitters in all of baseball. So he has that ability in him, and we have not seen him up to this point go on a hot streak, and that would be so much fun to watch. But maybe in the month of June, you start to see that happen. If Suarez, in my world, Stacey, if he kept this level of play and just raised his batting average, if he was sitting around 250, oh, man, he would check every single box off for me. But he is bringing legitimate contribution to this team. And as we talked about, 1.5 WAR right now, on pace for a 4.5 WAR. That is very, very good play.
I said that I had two things to tell you over a quick 10-minute span here. That was the first one. The second one I'll take 30 seconds with, which is, as a show, we love donuts, and we eat them all the time. And I found out that there was a donut fest where there would be a bunch of cool creations and a donut eating contest.
Mm.
10 minutes later, less than 10 minutes later, no, actually, immediately afterward, found out it was sold out, and I'm devastated.
Wow.
I am so sorry for your loss.
I have never been so excited and so immediately heartbroken.
It just ripped out from underneath you.
It's probably how you felt when you really wanted Odell Beckham Jr. to be here.
And oh, then yeah.
It wasn't immediate because we had the OBJ update.
Stephon Gilmore.
Yeah.
That was another one.
When like we were like breaking the news to Jake that a player he
was. That was a weird time in my life.
Look, it wasn't your best moment. It wasn't your worst. It was. It was really fun. It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. A recent interview with Seahawks GM John Schneider got us some fascinating insight into Seahawks draft decisions and the relationship between head coach and GM. It's a good listen. We'll play you some cuts. But I found, and I'm wondering if you guys will, that after listening to these answers, I had even more burning questions. And I don't know that we'll ever get the answers to those, but you're still going to want to hear them because this is going to spawn.
Don't go anywhere.
Let me tell you what. You will be talking about some of these answers with your friends all day.